Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Pixel Civ is proudly supported by Murdoch University School of Arts, who have been with us since the very beginning. It's where we learn how to make podcasts, radio, and videos. If you're interested in a creative degree in games, sound, film, journalism, or maybe you'd like to mix and match, you can head to murdoch.edu.au/arts to learn more about what they've got on offer. That's murdoch.edu.au/arts, or you can search Murdoch University for more information. Murdoch University School of Arts, proudly supporting Pixel Civ. Hello and welcome to Pixel Civ episode 102. My name is Mitch, and joining me today are my co-hosts Scott and Sarah. Hey guys.
Hey.
And hello.
Hey. Now, if you're joining us for the first time, Pixel Civ is a show dedicated to indie games and their stories from all over Australia and around the world. Our guest this week is Sean Simon, also known as Those Six Faces. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And so Sean is here to talk about his game Snake Time. But before we get to that, what are we covering, Scott?
Yes, Epic Games and Bethesda are choosing not to put their products on the Google Play Store and Steam Marketplace, respectively. Based on this, it's looking like we may need to have a heap more gaming apps to be able to play in the future.
Excellent. All right, let's get started.
Hey there. If you're enjoying the show and you want to hear more, subscribe to Pixel Sift on Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Spotify, or listen on pixelsift.com.au. See you there.
Yes, so as I said, Epic Games and Bethesda have moved swiftly away from Google Play and Steam to deliver their respective games, Fortnite and Fallout 76, to their customers. This follows a slow but consistent trend of companies and publishers choosing to sell their games through their own digital marketplace. But what will this mean for us and our game libraries? Will this be better for the consumer?
This means I'm going to have to download like a new launcher for every game I want to buy, right?
Basically. Like this... And also remember a new email password, login access.
No.
But I mean, in saying that, you do already have a few.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's probably going to be another three or four in the pile, I'd say, if that's the way things goes. But, you know.
Most AAA games, at least, that come through the Steam store, I think also have a little bit of a login, like a third-party login anyway. Sarah, is that true? You play a lot more PC games than we do.
I wouldn't say a lot, but I've noticed like there's a significant number that I've personally played myself. I mean, I've only played a very specific number of certain games, but out of my entire Steam library and games that I played over the years, I've noticed that a bunch have required me to make a separate account. Now, I don't necessarily have to log into that account every time I go to play a game. Oftentimes, it's just like a one-time thing and they just require you to make an account with them. For example, Evolve, when that came out, I had to make a separate 2K account for that or something. So I logged in, I signed up the very first time, then it never asked me for it again. Other games, such as Rainbow Six Siege, however, they actually load up through the Ubisoft launcher, but that's all connected through Steam. So I go to my Steam library, I go to boot up Rainbow Six Siege, and then the Ubisoft launcher boots up. And I had to have an account with that, obviously, which I signed up when I first bought the game. But it's kind of got this weird kind of integration with Steam almost. But, you know, obviously that's very different to situations like Origin, which is just basically it's its own hoster. It's got all its games on there. But yeah, I've noticed that a lot of games do require you to have your own account with them. So already we've started doing that, but they don't always require you to log in every time we boot up. So
that's a really good
point,
actually.
It's not really an inconvenience for the time being. Obviously, unless someone steals my password, though.
Yeah, as someone it keeps trying to do with my Epic account, I told Facebook, I was like, you can have it, just ask me.
Yeah, just have it.
I don't
it.
Really care.
Sean, as a developer and as someone who has a game on the Apple Store. What do you make of all this?
Well, one of the things with having all these different launches is, for me, it's it also takes up some space on my hard drive. So if I've got, like, say, Origin or Steam or a few other launches, it takes up some space. Another thing with having multiple launches is, with me especially, or this I've noticed this with other friends, is that it's very satisfying to have Steam as something where you've got all of your games, you've got a whole library, and you're just scrolling through your big list of games. But rather, when you've got a scarce amount of games in different locations and different launches, it's kind of like you have to really sift through the different launches to really look at your how many different games you've got. So me, as a perfectionist, I really like to see all of my games or things like that in just one repository, self-contained library.
I completely get that. I mean, it's a bit of a double-edged sword there, though, isn't it? Like, you want to have all your stuff in one place, but then you also don't want to kind of, like, pay into the monopoly that is becoming, well, that is Steam.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's
I have to say, though, when you have all your games in Steam, Steam does still have the option to import games into Steam.
Yeah, you
can. So let's say if you get one of these, like, let's say you get Fallout 76, you import it into Steam. Now, I'm not an expert on this, but theoretically, you could just launch it through Steam. So it's kind of in your library, but it's not linked to your Steam account, but it's just there. Like, I could put Photoshop into my Steam library if I really wanted to, then I'd have a Steam overlay in Photoshop and everyone know I was drawing. But, like, in saying that, though, I guess as long as the game doesn't require you to log in every time you boot up, then potentially that's a way to circumvent that problem. But again, that's still kind of avoiding the situation, like, potentially, you know, is this going to be bad if more games take this route? Is this going to be a problem for consumers? Is this going to bother people, or are we just going to let it slide if more and more games stop coming off Steam? Or is this potentially a good thing for games to break away from the Steam monopoly?
Well, look, what it really comes down to is money. There's with a lot of these digital content delivery systems, be it games or music or anything, they generally take a 30% cut as a general rule. I mean, I'm sure there's a fluctuation there between whatever, but, like, iTunes, Valve, even we're talking if you're into your music stuff, like Beatport, you know, TrackSource, all these people, you're selling your artistic wares, they're going to take a 30% cut just for having their digital shop, which, to be fair, is runaway robbery. But, like, that level of fee scraping has also been happening for a long time in, like, the artistic communities. So I kind of like that they're going away from that, because I feel like 30% is a bit, it's a bit of a piss take.
Another thing we do need to address is in the case of Fortnite and Epic and the Android store, and they're ignoring the Google Play Store, is they now have to disable some security on Android devices to actually put the game on the phone.
Well, absolutely. So, I mean, you're coming in through the side door, so you're going to open up so many potential security risks. But also, because you're not going to a proper store, there's going to be so many rip-offs and traps for younger players. You know, think about how many, like, you know, rip-off games are on a legit store like iTunes.
Yeah.
Imagine one, like, you know, getting out on the internet and just typing in Fortnite. It's going to be crazy.
Yeah, Malware, like, City. The Epic CEO said, gamers have been proven to be able to adopt safe software practices, and gaming has thrived on PC, on open PC platforms throughout many sources. And he cites marketplaces like Steam, Activision, and Blizzard's Battle.net.
That is a good point.
That's pretty optimistic, I think, actually.
Yeah,
because they can't not know how young Fortnite's audience skews.
That's exactly what I was about to say. You know, like, he listed off, you know, let's say Blizzard or Riot. You know, I'm not saying that it's specifically or in any kind of way an older market, but Fortnite is particularly young. And, you know, you've got these things about, you know, parents, you know, buying lessons for their students, for their kids. you know, and, like, when I was in EB Games very recently, it was a mum with this young boy, asking something about Fortnite. It was like, it is just, it's the hot thing at the moment for young kids. So they're going to be the most at risk.
Yeah. Okay. Speaking of hot things at the moment, if you just joined us, we are Pixel Civ. My name is Mitch and I'm joined by Scott and Sarah. And this week we have Sean Simon with us and he's here to talk about, and we are currently talking about the move away from to traditional digital marketplaces, in favor of self-publishing almost, and things like Steam and Google Play Store are becoming less relevant.
See, as far as that side goes, you know, with the lack of kind of people making money from the creators of these, let's call them works of art at the moment, is that, yeah, it takes the kind of the monetary side of things and the gain back into the publisher and developers' pockets, which I do like the side of that.
One thing I have noticed in regards to, like, consolidating all your games is the chat program Discord is beginning to kind of fill that gap.
Yes.
So I've noticed that one of Discord's recent updates, I can't really remember which one it was, but I now, on the home screen, I can now launch my games from Discord.
You can also join us on our Discord. where we talk about all things Pixel and Sifty. But yeah, I mean, I for one feel good about this move. I know it'll be annoying having an extra launcher and all the extra stuff that comes with it. But I think in the long run, it'll be better. And like Sarah said, we've been doing those similar things of having a specific, you know, login for that company or publisher for a very long time. You know, I've had a Battle.net for very many years and I've got, you know, like I said, I have the Epic account as well. You just do it. It's part of the course. And this will just be a new part of it.
Awesome. I think that's pretty much where we can leave that. I would like to get started on talking about Snake Time.
Sure.
Coming right up.
Hey, Mitch, what are you doing this Friday?
I'm playing Fortnite this Friday.
But didn't you hate that game?
Yeah, but I'm going to go get my pickaxe anyway.
What time is it on?
It's on at 7:30 p.m. on every Friday night. We play Fortnite and I hate it.
You'll love it. Ugh. On twitch.tv/pixelsift.
You know, this week it's not me. I'm not going to be playing it this week. It's either Johnny or Sarah is going to be doing it. Woo. So, yeah, have fun.
I think it's actually, it might be both.
Oh, it could be both.
Both of us. Right.
Nice. Okay. So, double header that one. Anyway, enough about that and enough about us. This week we are joined by Sean Simon, and he is the lone developer of Snake Time, the time-bending puzzle game spin on the traditional snake with reimagined mechanics, funky level design. So, Sean, for those of us not in the know, what is Snake Time?
So, Snake Time is like a groovy turn-based puzzle game about time travel. So it's think of it like you've got a classic game of Snake, and then you combine the elements, if you've ever played this game called Braid, where you can rewind time and solve little things and then move on forward and then go back in time. So it has this element where it's you go from platform to platform, covering all the tiles, and then you've got these things called time buttons that can take you back in time. Now, since there's lots of dead ends in the game, like little narrow corridors that once you go into a corridor, you can't go back on your own path, there's some time buttons that let you go back in time and then take a different path. Now, the little thing with this game is when you rewind back in time and you move forward through a different path, the past path, your previous timeline, will also move alongside you, with you.
Oh, like
so it's almost like you can race alongside yourself from the previous timeline.
Awesome.
So what was the main inspiration behind the time travel mechanic? Because that's something that I never thought I needed in Snake. But I thought after I saw the gameplay, I was like, oh, nice. Let's do this. Yeah.
Thanks. Well, it was this game was originally a project I was working on through my last year in high school, back about 2 or 3 years ago. I had a little dream of little snakes going through little holes and then going back on their path and going to a different, going down a different path, kind of like Hydra splitting apart, like that, dragon, which is like splitting apart in its neck. But, I had that idea where you would have like something which is following a path, like just like Snake or Light Cycles, and then it goes back. And then takes a different turn. And then that got me thinking, what about if I turn that into a more turn-based playable game? So I kept going through these stages of just trying to really work out this idea. And then I got to this prototype stage. So I had this prototype which I was working on, which was all 3D. Problem was it was very very laggy. But I had my concept of time travel. I demoed that a bit. People enjoyed it, but people found it a bit visually confusing. So I ditched it, and then about a year and a half later, I got back onto it and reimagined the art style to be this flat style we have today.
You mentioned that players found it visually confusing. I often hear of game developers playtesting, and they know when people definitely are connecting with the game, but how did you know people were disconnecting with that element of the art style?
Well, so originally the prototype had, it was all in 3D, and we had a bunch of platforms. It was almost like it was 3D on a circular grid. And players weren't really able, because my background had this like crystal white style to it. And then my platforms also had this white color to it. And people were a bit confused, like they weren't sure where the floor was, where platforms were. People were trying to go off off the edge of a platform, and one of the things which inspired the new flat style was really how people were responding to the complexity of the visual style. So I thought I should just go the opposite direction and go for a completely simplistic flat vector style.
So you do work alone. Has that always been the case? Mm-hmm. I've worked in teams before.
Look, I've worked on a few projects here and there. Currently, I'm in my second year of uni, so I'm working on a group in a few group projects here and there. But mostly, one of the things is most of the projects I've been doing in the past have been just solo experiments or solo things here and there.
So you say you started a couple of years ago before you finished high school. I mean, you're only 19 now. How long have you been developing for?
Ever since probably nine. I've just some coding, this coding school called Games Training, which is still running somewhere. I went there and I just learned the basics of Unity, and then I really haven't stopped since.
Took it and run with it.
Yeah, it's always been my passion.
So how many games have you made in that time?
All right, now here's the funny part. I've always been making little projects here and there, but throughout my more formative years, when I've got a really exciting idea, which I've been really keen to do, I've done quite the opposite what any game developer would advise. I started developing the game from the menu and then going to the gameplay, but I'd always lose my motivation during the making the menu, and so I'll just stop the game and go to a completely new project. So right now I've got about 20 or so unfinished menus of games which I had a really passion for.
I mean, that must have been good part of the, I guess, formative development of yourself as a developer, though, you know, learning the mistakes, learning from your mistakes and how to go forward and actually complete a game.
Yeah. It's been one of the things I've been always trying to train myself on, especially scoping a project. Because when I'm working as a solo developer, I don't really have that other person there to say, look, this is too ambitious. So I've kind of had to learn myself of exactly what I can get done in a certain amount of time and then work towards these goals I give myself.
Awesome. So if you're just joining us, my name is Mitch and we are PixelSif. I'm joined by my co-hosts, Scott and Sarah. And this week we are joined also by Sean Simon, the creator of Snake Time. Now, Sean, now get back to the questions. You said you had made a lot of different games. How did you know that Snake Time was the one you wanted to really flesh out?
I kind of felt like all my previous projects were almost experiments. I think during my second last year of high school, I worked on this year-long project, which I got finished, called Greebrawl, which is like a little spherical platformer, which has about 500 or so different levels in it, which I thought was really good. But at the time, I realized that as much effort I put into it, I felt like I could still make something even better. I mean, I know the perfectionist complex is always something which, as any developer, has to battle, but I felt like Snake Time is definitely the type of game that I can really put my name to, because I feel like it's got a real consistent style through it, which I've been trying to discipline myself on a specific artistic style, which calls heavily on this American artist in the 1950s and 60s called Saul Bass. Mm. I hope I've said his name right or yeah. pronounced it, but yeah.
Yeah, no, that's I can definitely see that. There's a bunch of 90s stuff that I really liked that borrows from the same style, and I was definitely picking up on that. That Mission Hill was what it reminded me of. on that, what's your favorite part of the new game that you've created, Snake Time?
I'd say definitely the third world. I mean, I'm not going to give too much away.
Yeah, please,
but
no spoilers.
Because with each world I introduce a new mechanic, which is quite exciting to see how people respond to the new mechanic. But I also also introduce a new style and new palette to the game. So definitely getting people to playtest the third world, which I won't give away, but is tech themed, is definitely exciting to see.
Our viewers are very lucky enough to be viewing some footage we've got of, they're looking at my ugly mug, but before that they were looking at footage of the game, so people can get a bit of a taste of it and get out there and taste it for themselves, I guess.
We do have a couple of questions from the Twitch chat, speaking of which. Epivorous would like to know how the music came together, because he says it's quite funky as well. And I think Moody Xander earlier said the art style looks very groovy, so I think the chat's very much enjoying the game footage. But, yeah, how did the music come together?
With the music track, for the trailer audio, I had a friend compose the track, Jody Toomey, of Strange Band Audio. And one of the things is with the music, with each world, I have about a 6 or so minute track, which generates at a random point. So it's kind of like every time you replay a level, you'll always be hearing sort of like a different sound theme, sort of like a different ambient jazzy track in the background.
Right.
So that was done with a couple... bunch of code.
So we have a couple of questions from the stream from Limbot. He would like to know, firstly, what's a feature that you have cut from the game, if any?
There's been a few features. One of the bigger ones was the mechanic where when you step on a button, it would open up a platform that was invisible would open up. The reason why I cut that feature, the mechanic, is because every mechanic I introduce into the game, I want it to be sort of have multiple purposes that revolve around the time button. And I couldn't really see much me doing much with that sort of like just a button and a platform sort of thing. In saying that, there's a whole bunch of mechanics which have been planned for later updates, which have already been developed. It's just a matter of doing the levels. So I definitely see new and exciting features to the game.
And just one more question from the chat. What feature would you creep into the game if you had time or funding?
Actually, there's two I have in mind. One would be a teleporter, so something where you step onto a platform and it would take you to another platform in the level. And then this isn't a mechanic, it's more an actual feature. It would be to really flesh out the level editor, which I've got going. because I've set up a custom level editor, which I use as a developer. I've loaded onto my iPad, so when I'm on the train, I'm just developing levels. That way I can really do something productive in my daily uni commute. I don't just sit there for 2 hours on the train. I'm actually making levels. But definitely the feature I'd want to do is really fleshing that out and turning it into an actual part of the game where people can be able to create their own levels and share them.
Is it intimidating to want to give your users the tools that allow you to create the game?
It's not so much. Mostly the intimidating thing is all of the little bugs and things that I would have to iron out. Like if people just spam the level database and make a whole bunch of like terrible levels. But the thing is, I'll be making sure that I have like some presets for things like background, so people don't have the full control over it. I still have some individual autonomy, but ultimately this is the type of game which in the 60 levels that I've currently done, I don't even really tap into the full potential of what I know this time button mechanic is capable of, because I know, although I have my levels which have really explore different ways, different users of it. I know that there's other ways which I know users, after much testing, could find different ways of using this mechanic.
So after a lot of testing, and the game's been out since July, if I'm correct, how's the game been received in that time?
It's really good. I've currently passed about 600 sales on the App Store, which
very
I'm
nice.
Very chuffed with.
Yeah.
And people seem to, I've given it to people to play test, and they seem to be having a fun time. I've also shared it around, got a couple of shares. But yeah, so far it's good. Since this is one of my first actual times where I'm really concentrating on the marketing side, and that's something completely new to me, which I haven't really explored. It's definitely, if anything, learning this process is definitely a bigger thing, which is hopefully going to improve many of my future games.
Awesome. Well, this game is available on iOS and Android. Mm-hmm. If people want to go and check out more information about it, where can they go?
I've actually got a website. It's snaketimegame.com. And I believe if I go to that website, it also has a link to my Twitter, which is at those six faces. The six in mystical number six.
Yes. So if you're viewing on any of the view platforms, you can see that in front of you as well. But yes, I'm sure if you typed in, I mean, like I always say, I'm pretty sure our viewers are pretty adept at the Google. And if you're not, then I don't know how you got this far.
If they're not, this will all be available in the description below the episode. So that, I think, is time for us to end.
It's about all she wrote.
Yeah. Thank you very much for joining us, Sean, for spending some time with us
this
evening and telling us about Snake Time.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun. This episode was hosted by myself, Mitchell Lowe, and also Sarah Island and Scott Quigg, and it was produced by Fiona Bartholomeus, and our executive producer is Gianni Di Giovanni. Thank you very much to the Murdoch University School of Arts for supporting Pixel Civ all throughout these episodes. If you'd like to more about the great creative degree, you can visit once again murdoch.edu.au/arts. Awesome. So as always, we'll be sticking up the links to these topics we've talked about in the show notes on our website. And the best thing you can do to keep up with everything PixelCiv is head to our Discord, pixelciv.com.au/discord, and we're in there all the time, so you can have a chat to us about the games you're playing and the things you're reading, and even sometimes the developers are in there that we've had on the show. But Scott, if people want to listen to other episodes, where should they go?
Yeah, they can go to our website to stream episodes, subscribe as a podcast, either on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, or whatever podcast player you like. We're on them all. We're live every Thursday. Next week at this time, join us for Pixel Sift Plays as we check play some of the indie games we feature on the podcast. Our next episode is, I don't know, 23rd of August? Yeah. Also, go to the pixelsift.com.au website and check out the Heart to Game custom video that Gianni did. Mitch and I are in a game. How did we not bring that up?
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I just forgot
it's
about
Mitch
it
and
entirely.
Scott's adventure. It's the next big thing. Go check it out. And while you're there, check out Snake Time.
Yep. All right. Thank you. See ya.
Love, love.
Bye.
Bye.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.